This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 279, Subscriptions. Welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm delighted to come to you on a holiday, well, kind of almost holiday Friday, alongside my friend and co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Hey. And it, 2 days ago was Canada Day.
I know. I was singing O Canada. I had my Tilly hat on and everything.
Do you have a toque?
No, but I do have a Tilly.
Okay.
So it starts with T and I wear it on your head. So, you know.
Yes. That's like a moose.
kind of like that. Hey, Michael, you had a awesome week recently, and you yes. and I have not had a chance to talk very much about it, and we probably could spend the entire podcast on this. So,
we could spend a couple of podcasts on this.
We could do so much more, but you were at the virtual version of WWDC, and I was there joining you for some of it, but you spent a substantial time and energy. So I'm curious to know, where can I learn more about what your experiences were like? And what did you have as your highlights? And what did you think about the Apple Design Awards?
So let's hit all that. MichaelRowe01.com. For all the greatest news on WWDC. Have 5 posts so far, 1 for each day. Really kind of going through what I did each day. I averaged about 9 sessions a day. When I'm there in person, you usually get about 4 or 5 in a day.
Wow. So now, were you able to do more because you didn't have to like walk between places or something? Or
no, mainly because I think they did a really, really good job of making the sessions only contain what they needed to.
Mm-hmm.
There was one session that was 2 minutes long that was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. It was about debugging techniques, right? And at San Jose, when they do it, every session is about 50 minutes long, except for the lunch sessions, which are 90.
Mm-hmm.
And they might have a little extra fluff. And so you get about 4 or 5 in a day,
right?
You start at 8, you end about 6, 7 o'clock at night. There's a lunch break. There's some other breaks for food and, you know, getting your technology geek on. So 9 sessions a day. I could easily spend another few more weeks doing that in order to get all 200 sessions that were posted.
Wow.
I did not get to 200. I got about round number, let's call it 50. And it was phenomenal. The content of the sessions was really, really cool. I got 1 lab session. I signed up for 2. The number one thing that's just the reason you go to WWDC is the lab sessions. So this is you one-on-one with an engineer in the area of the APIs or the operating systems or whatever that you need to talk to.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
You open up your laptop, you pull out the code, and you work through it. I've been trying to add Siri shortcuts to my Wasted Time app.
Yep.
The first day, we got past some major problems, but because it was all done via WebEx and it was all scheduled, we only had 15 minutes.
Wow.
And at 15 minutes, it was over, and we weren't done. So I tried to sign up for another one on Friday,
mm-hmm.
and they selected people. And I didn't make the cut. So I still have the problem that I was working on with that engineer. So I was hoping to get some really good debugging sessions in. I got some. But the problem is I basically get the message when you try to run the shortcut from my app.
Right.
That pops up on top of the shortcuts app that says there was a problem with the app.
Oh.
So go figure that out. Now, I've been trying, you know, looking through system logs. I rewrote my code to use system logs instead of print statements in the debugger, mm-hmm, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But the best I can tell, I've done everything right, which obviously I haven't, but best I can tell I have. And Siri is saying, hey, I don't see a shortcut with those parameters. And in my code, there's a shortcut with those parameters. So something is misconfigured.
It's a semicolon somewhere.
I've raised a feedback request as requested by one of the engineers in the forums. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've posted code galore. I've posted steps. And the only response so far in there was from an engineer saying, hey, raise a feedback request and post the feedback request number in this chat. I mean, in the forum
right.
post. And I did.
Okay.
And I am waiting. The other really cool thing, Apple Silicon is going to be phenomenal. I did sign up and was accepted to get one of the developer kits, transition kits.
And has it arrived?
It was plugged in on Monday.
Woohoo!
I am uncovering issues with the Swift-based wrapper framework that I use to access Twitter.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's getting confused because I'm trying to compile a Rosetta version, which is the transition format,
right.
which is Intel stuff running in basically in a
shell kind of
translation
yeah.
mode.
Yeah.
And then a native version. The Rosetta version won't compile because the Swift framework that I'm using for Twitter, called Swifter, doesn't know how to compile. Because it's like, you're trying to compile the iOS version, but you're on the Mac. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, but it does.
The other part is it's got some hard-coded language parameters in there to look for x86.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it's not x86. Now, I haven't done this yet. I may go in because I did go through one of the sessions on converting your stuff to
native, right?
To native Apple Silicon. And I may look in the compiler directives and see if I can just literally swap out the x86 for I think they use the ARM64.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can do that, I might just work my way around it. And then I can contribute that code back to the framework because it's an open source framework.
Right. That'll be cool.
But I just haven't had time for that.
That'll be really cool, actually.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, that's that's the thing, you know.
But it's really cool because the device is actually, it's a Mac Mini running the same chip as my iPad Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And for what I'm doing on it, it's running Big Sur. It's running Xcode. I tried to install Motion. It would not let me install Motion. It said I didn't have the right processor for that. That doesn't surprise me.
Right.
So needless to say, I haven't tried to install Logic or Final Cut on the device anyway because it's a development box. I'm not going to mess with that stuff. But I'm really impressed that, you know, three-year-old Silicon is running Big Sur at a fairly, I mean, it's a completely acceptable speed.
That's incredible. That's really yeah. incredible. And the fact that you have this device in hand already, up, running, working, boy, you just got to give Apple some credit here for announcing
credit it. And $500.
Yeah. Well, now, I haven't read all the way through this. You don't get to keep this box, right? So is that sort
no.
of a deposit and you get that money back when you ship it back? Or how does this work?
That's not clear.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
This might be a subscription.
I'm sensing a theme.
But no, the design awards, though, you know, I looked at those and I've actually played some of the games that have won. I'm pretty impressed. The one that you had called out, I have not bought this one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really impressed by what it's doing, but you know, it would be something just to play with, and $90 for this app is not something just to play with for me.
Yeah, we're talking about StaffPad, and
that's amazing.
The thing that grabbed me here was being able with your iPad and your pencil to compose in a nearly native writing format, and with all the kind of cool stuff that is in iPad OS with Scribble and so on and so forth, that's coming. Right, this is here now, and being able to write on the staff, have it propose the chords, do all those things, does look really pretty darn incredible.
Yeah, and you know, I took took a couple of the scribble sessions. And the first thing I did was see how it worked with my app.
Yep.
And it just works out of the box.
Well, it's native.
It's really for my app. Yeah. I mean, it's native. And the fact that all of this handwriting recognition and translation is happening on device is incredible.
Did you have to do much training, Michael?
None. Zero. And my handwriting is atrocious.
I know.
And
I've seen it. I've seen it. That's
it's
pretty
horrible.
Cool, though, that it happened that fast. And you know, related to that too. And we've had this topic on the show like about 12 times, but so I have to ask it. You know, having the Palm Pilot experience, have you reverted back to using Graffiti by accident, and then have to retrain yourself to write like a normal human?
That's been the case for years. Mm-hmm. I cannot write in longhand long stretches of stuff because of all the years that I use Graffiti,
yep.
I flip into Graffiti mode.
Mm-hmm. Your brain is on Graffiti.
Yeah. And so I think Graffiti actually made my handwriting even worse than it was. And it was bad.
I mean, I catch myself doing that on the watch, you know, so when I get a tweet or something and I need to reply kind of quickly, you know, I'll do a short thing on my watch and I'm doing Graffiti on the watch. It's like, darn it. You know, that was supposed to be a T.
And it doesn't get it right.
That's a T.
It does not get it right. Yes. The T is the one that gets me every time. Yeah.
Oh, all right. So
I understand.
I mean, we could talk so much about Apple, and we could talk about Apple and BMW too, because that was one of the things that I was like, you know, car key, pretty darn cool stuff. And again, hearkening back to our non-audio podcast from last week, you got to go check out that, you know, the jiggle mode video there. But the article that you and I both saw around BMW and what BMW is doing around subscriptions was something that raised our hackles, maybe just a little bit, we should say. So
yeah, that's the way.
So let me set it up. Let me set this up for our listeners. So our longtime listeners, and you know who you are, Ian, will know that we chatted a few weeks ago about the Tesla example of a Tesla used car. And the stories that kind of ensued around having Tesla autopilot, you know, does that carry over from driver to next driver when you have a used car? So,
yeah, I mean, did you buy it or did you license it?
Did you buy it? Did you license it? So this article from TechCrunch is talking about a number of features on the car. So one of them, as an example, was heated seats. And you and I both know, Michael, that when you have a heated seat, you've got coils in the seat that when you flip a switch, electricity goes through them and they turn on or they don't. Right? And and heated seats, even for those of us who live in North Carolina where it gets really hot in the summer, and maybe you don't use them that much in the summer, but
I do.
But they're wonderful. I mean, when your back hurts,
they're wonderful.
It's just great.
Right? Yeah. When I first got my car with them and I was driving up from Florida up to North Carolina in the middle of the summer, with all four windows down, the sunroof open, it's just so hot, but I wanted to get that airflow, the heated seats were on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the example in this particular article is saying, so, you know, as a customer of such car, you could have that as a subscription so that you could turn the heated seats. You could buy a subscription for heated seats, for as you use it. Right. So it's heated seats as a service. And if you're only going to use them for a couple months out of the year, isn't that a nice, wonderful thing?
No.
That's my response too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I just spent significant five figures on a car. The heated seats option was, you know,
was key.
Was key. It's one of the reasons for the car.
Absolutely.
So to speak. And I don't want you to figure out how much a warm tush is worth to me.
You know, I had a car once that had a heated steering wheel, and
mine does,
and that was fantastic too. I missed that because that's not a feature that's per usual. So there are interesting aspects of, you could say, well, I want maps as a service, or I want, you know, other entertainment as a service, like Sirius Radio or things along those lines,
or access to CarPlay.
Well, that's another interesting BMW way of providing that kind of capability, because in my mind, having a mobile device, which is where my subscriptions live for things that I'd like to consume around entertainment, maps, other things like that, that makes sense for a mobile device to have those subscriptions on it, because then I can take that from place to place, car to car, and I'm not paying for the same map, if you will, across multiple cars. Or if I travel again, I don't know when that might be, but let's pretend that, you know, maybe I went somewhere and I need to rent a car. I will have on my device the maps that are necessary to get where I need to go. Right. So it's
the thing that kills me about it is you're already paying a significant premium to have a car with all these features.
Right.
Right. And those costs are covered. Those costs are covered. They wouldn't put them in the vehicle if they weren't covered. It's not like something... I mean, you need those coils in the seat. You need
the capabilities
in the head unit for CarPlay. You need the coils in the steering wheel. The costs are covered. Everything else... And they've already marked them up the 400% above cost in order to address the price of the vehicle. I'm making up the number, but let's say it's that. This is greed. They just want more money out of you. That's all it is.
Oh, Michael.
I don't have an opinion.
You don't.
Just
what I worry about is things that could go horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what happens if your subscription lapses and an important safety capability?
Then you get a cold tush.
Is part of such a subscription, right? You know, that could be problematic. Or, yeah, you could have a cold rear end, you know, because it's not been warmed. Or the adaptive lights or the adaptive suspension is not engaged because you bought a, 6-month subscription and it's now lapsed and now the performance of the vehicle has changed and altered. Because all these things can be delivered via software updates over the air.
Yes, I read somewhere, as long as the hardware components are built in the vehicle.
Well, right. And this is the promise, too, of a vehicle. Shoot, you can take a vehicle and you can make it almost as brand new as you can with a phone, right? When you get a new operating system on the phone, you're now getting all these new features that are taking advantage of all the hardware that already exists with new capability, right? And in some cases, it might not be, super crucial. It'll be a very nice thing to have. Anyway, we could go on this for forever.
Yes, we could.
So
I have an opinion.
You have an opinion.
I'm going to keep my real opinion a little bit quiet.
Yeah. So I would have to say I'm not in favor of this sort of thing. The fun thing about subscriptions too is they're sticky. Right. So before you know it, you've got subscriptions to all kinds of things. And the question is, are you using them anymore? And you almost need a bot or an AI to go and interrogate all your subscriptions on a regular basis and say, hey, are you using this still? Right.
Yeah. And if you remember, we had one that did that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So let's move along. Let's go to something fun, which is actually also a subscription, too. So I've not investigated this really hard, but this article from Ars Technica came across my feed here, and I have not been playing Dungeons and Dragons for a long time. And this is talking about RPGs in general, role playing games in general. But there is a capability out there, a service called Roll20, like that name.
Yep.
That is a digital platform to provide the dungeon master or the person who's running the game a number of features and capabilities, which in this social distance time, this is an immersive experience that you can do tabletop gameplay and role-playing games across the world, having a shared experience that's visually immersive. You can uncover things to everyone as that begins to happen. You can see on your screen what's going on. And frankly, I was not aware of this. And I thought it was wacky, super cool.
I like it. And I haven't played AD&D or Dungeons & Dragons, Advanced Dungeons & Dragons in a while. I did about 5 years ago. I played a little Pathfinder, which is very, very, very similar.
Oh, okay.
Had a small group that we played that for a little while. Needless to say, people work life got in the way, so didn't continue much of it. And I'm still looking at my bookshelf up there, and I see my Dungeon Master's Guide, my Monster Manual, my
Player's
Handbook, yeah. And Monster Manual 2. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Got to have Monster Manual 2, because you can never have enough monsters.
Well, when you get past the gelatinous cube, you know, you need to go on to some more advanced, you know, things, yes. Right?
Yes, I always hated the Beholder.
Mm.
The Eye of the Beholder, that was.
Yeah, there was one particular monster. I'm not even going to say the name because it killed a beloved character of mine. And, you know, once they're dead, they're dead. They're shake dead. My fist at the sky. Darn anyway. You. Yeah, so
no, this is really cool. I like it. And it kind of reminds me of the one table that we talked about a while back.
Well, it does. Right, you're right. So, you know, having a table could be even better and could provide holographic, could provide 3D immersive experiences, augmented reality. Those would be good things. But you'd have
once
to...
Once you're all sitting around the same table.
You'd have to be sitting around... Well, you don't have to sit around the same table necessarily. I could sit at my
if
table.
Everybody had the table.
And you could sit at your table.
Communicate and the tables would talk to each other.
Or we could just have a regular old table, and the way you would see the same things you want to see is, say, through a pair of glasses.
Glasses would be cool.
Glasses would be cool. So Google thought
matter of fact,
that
if they were
was
fashionable.
Google thought it was pretty cool, because they spent a little bit of money on acquiring a smart glasses company called North, which we've talked about before, too.
Yeah, yeah. North has done some really cool things on making them a little bit more stylish and less clunky looking.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Google has come out with, you know, Google Glass version 2. It's an enterprise product. These look much more like not safety glasses, but a little bit more like Ben Folds might wear these glasses.
Yes.
So they're much more stylish than the Borg overlay that Google Glass 1 had. They're not as safety glass design like, you know, HoloLens looks like. So a little bit more natural, less obtrusive.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of cool. And with all the rumors around, you know, Apple having AR glasses in the pipe somewhere, I think Google's getting ready to, you know, be a little bit more
aggressive in this space.
Consumer friendly is what I'm looking for. These are more consumer focused.
They are, and we've had lots of discussions here too about that being important for widespread adoption. Yep. You know, something that I'm only kind of noticing now, having looked at this, is that North is a Canadian company too. So,
Canada
yet again. So happy Canada Day, guys! This is a good time to go do all those things. All right, so nice and interesting conversation there. We also had a interesting post in from Ian alerting us to what's going on today, which is when we're recording, and tomorrow, which is when we are going to be assembling stuff. So by the time you hear this, it's already over. So sorry you missed it, but it's called The Lost Horizon.
But if you went to our Twitter feed, you would see it in the feed.
You would. You have seen it in the feed, because this is now the future and we're talking about the past.
If in the past you went to our feed, you would have seen it and you would have already watched it and you would enjoy it as much as we enjoyed it, and we would all be reminiscing by now.
Yes. Yeah. It'll be a fond memory of, you know, mosh pits and dance party with, you know, bunny avatars and all kinds of good fun stuff.
Well, I actually really enjoyed the one feed of kind of the more reggae type sound that was going on, which literally was just the DJ.
Yes.
And she was spinning the tunes, dancing on by herself, listening to music. The music was good. The Fat Boy Slim kind of house dance party track was good, but it was that, as you say, you know, the bunny ear avatar world, which, you know, that's okay. It reminds me of all the old Second Life parties. I like this. I like the fact that on some of the streams, you get all four of them, and you pick the one that you want, and you listen to that for a while. Good stuff.
Yeah, so thanks, Ian, for pointing that out and for us to be able to share it back in the past for those of you listening to this in the present on the Twitter feed. So if you're not a Twitter follower right now, you know, you should definitely
you should go follow us over at Twitter at games at work_biz.
Fun fact here too, and maybe this is where I need to listen more to the reggae piece here just a bit, is that I think you know that I've been into ska for quite a while. I like the horn lines and, you know, the upbeat tempos and stuff.
Yeah, man.
There is a newly updated, like in the last week or two, a ska set of essentials and such from Apple on Apple Music. And It has an awful lot of reggae or near reggae to it. And I hadn't really thought before about how the relationships between those two musical styles work, but it's kind of cool, you know?
You hadn't?
I really hadn't.
Wow.
I'd always compartmentalize them different because I used to go to reggae night at Colonel Chutney's in downtown Chapel Hill on a regular basis. They would have pitchers of beer for minuscule amounts of money. Poor starving student kind of opportunity. Get out there, listen to some reggae on a Friday night or Saturday night and just enjoy your beer and then walk back home to the dorm. So I used to do that a lot. And I didn't kind of, you know, put them in to the mold of Real Big Fish and that sort of thing too. So anyway.
Cool.
Paths crossing.
Yes.
So talking about paths crossing, this is a little bit of a blast from the past. We have a couple of those for this show. And this is the track point, or the track point two, as I recall it, on a ThinkPad computing device that was part of IBM design back in the day. And I remember this being on my work computers and home computers too, and I loved it. This was like my preferred way to work with a pointer on my screen.
Yeah, when I was traveling a lot as a consultant back in the day, right? I the original track point was kind of truly looked like a tip of an eraser on a number two pencil. The track point two made it flatter. That was the difference. One was more rounded as a dome and the other one was flatter. I love this because you couldn't pull out a trackpad or a mouse or anything on the tray on the plane.
Right.
But with this, if you could unfold the device, you had full control. And as a touch typist, it didn't get in the way, but it was right where my finger was used to being on the home keys and then shift to the left or shift to the right, depending on which finger. And you had total control. I really wish somebody, anybody, would put this on a laptop again. I would buy a brand new laptop, put this on it, get rid of the trackpad, and you use your thumb for the mouse buttons. I would buy that laptop. I don't care if it was running Linux. You know, it could be running Amigasoft.
for all you care, right?
That's right. Just a brand new laptop with modern technology and a track point. I would buy it the next day.
Will anybody out there find me a trackpad to love? Trackpoint to love.
Without a trackpad. Just the trackpoint.
Well, you know, now that you say that, Michael, when I'm looking at my Apple computer, that's right here in front of me, the amount of real estate that's consumed by the trackpad. It's just like, it's huge. Now, granted, the goodness of that is it does give my wrist something to work on, and I have not had any kind of carpal tunnel syndrome-y sort of things in years and years. No, knock on wood for that. But this, I get where you're coming from, and I like the ones that had the little bumps on top. I didn't like the concave version, so I would always
I didn't like the concave. I like the rounded, more rounded domed
top
eraser ones
with the little dots on top to give sort of a little friction. And I used to collect them because they would
somewhere. I probably have a drawer full of them.
Yeah.
I mean, not a whole drawer, but a little drawer with a bunch of packs of them.
Because that was what was happening to me. You know, they would wear down over time. Yeah. So you need to have a fresh one, you know, every, I don't know, 6 months or a year or whatever it was.
And every once in a while you look down your thumb, or not your thumb, but your pointer finger, and it would like have this indentation.
So I used typically my middle finger on my right hand for that. You know, I've got really? The muscle memory. So that's what I did to move around. And that was easier for me as a touch typist. On my right hand, middle finger, that's what did the mouse. And then I could easily keep typing from there.
Wow, to me it was my pointer, but yeah, I guess it depends, because you know, home keys, right? Mm-hmm. ASDF, JKL semicolon, and it existed right between G and H.
Yeah. So I get that point.
So you would lift your
I would lift
hand
my whole hand and move and then type.
So you would focus on mouse movement, then focus on focus on mouse. Okay, cool.
I multitask that way. That was my MO.
That was context switching. I like it.
I suppose so. I guess it was move, then, you know, do the next thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Next article, another one in from our listening audience, is from the 3D printing industry. And we've talked quite a bit about the Boston Dynamics robots before. The swizzle on this one. Yeah. The swizzle on this one is that, oh, look at this. It's from the Max Planck Institute in Tübingen and in Stuttgart. How cool is that?
I mean,
I've been there before. That's kind of cool. They have a 3D printed version of this. I mean, get out of Dodge, right? So
yeah. Well, if you think about it, what this is doing is, the dog was a really great example of understanding the physics required for motion,
right?
Controlled motion, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very stable controlled motion, and this just shows that form factor really is an effective form factor. I mean, because this is, you know, this is looks like standard 3D printing, probably. A replicator, or, you know, maybe a little bit higher end than that. It's not like one of these $400 you know, 3D printers you're going to buy at home.
Right.
But it's PLA, I think. Or is it ABS? I'm trying to look at the material. But yeah, I mean, this is stuff that you could do at home and build this. Obviously, you need some of the other... There are some components that are metal, so those are not printed... Even though you can print metal, and you need the software, but yeah, this is really cool.
The Open Dog Project. Wow!
You scale it down and make little tiny ones, you know, about the size of matchbox cars, and then we can ask the question: which would you rather be attacked by?
A giant duck?
A giant a horse-sized duck, or 100 duck-sized horses?
Oh, I love it.
But yeah, this is cool. This is something I'm going to have to do more research exactly on this article and what they're doing, because, you know, build your own killer. I mean, your own cute dog robot killer. We'll call it killer.
Spot.
That's what you end up in after it attacks you. Ooh. Just the spot.
Okay. Moving along, we got a couple more things that we thought were fun and that we thought you would enjoy. So this next one, Michael, I'll let you set it up. You found it. It was super fun from the Pokemon Company. Is it the Pokemon Company themselves?
Well, that would be Nintendo, right?
It's a partnership is what they're saying.
Isn't Pokemon owned by Nintendo? I'm not a Pokemon person. I played it a little bit.
It is. Okay. But why is it saying the Pokemon Company? It must be Nintendo.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't know. Anyway, so someone decided it would be a great idea to create Pokemon engagement and wedding rings. And I guess you got to collect them all, which I guess depends on the society.
Well.
And my first reaction when I saw this was, you have got to be kidding me. Right? And then I was like, well, I mean, the designs aren't horrible, and if you like these styles and you're a big Pokemon fan,
you're just getting into the reggae mood there, Mike. I can tell.
Yeah, yeah, it's the ska that I was listening to earlier. You know, these would be nice. Lots of different designs, and they have the kind of the Pikachu design was the one that in the main article, and then you actually clicked through and went to the catalog.
Yep.
And so you can see kind of the design of the creature in the design of the ring. As from that perspective, again, if you're a fan,
it's yeah, it's electric.
I think they're hideous.
It's electric. Yeah, so I don't know that I would quite go for them either. And the pressure, you know, versions with the tails holding the stone between the two tails, yeah, you got to worry about that too. ask me how I know sometime. anywho, back on our subscription theme here just a little bit.
Well, you could subscribe to Ring of the Month Club.
you could, I suppose. The article was talking about, and for those of you who know Pokemon pretty well, I choose you is sort of the phrase that that the Pokemon trainer usually says as they grab or for the Pokeball and
they
throwing
grab
out
grab the Pokeball.
Pikachu. Yeah. I choose you, Pikachu. there was a fun article and associated video around artificial intelligence, machine learning, and deepfake videos. And this is all about what Disney has been researching and doing. For example, the kinds of techniques that were used in some of the latest Star Wars films to bring actors who have passed away to allow the virtual models of those actors to be incorporated into the film, which is pretty cool. This particular one, Michael, I know caught your eye, and it certainly did when I was watching it too, of how you can do face swaps and how the technology is getting better and better to provide a an experience that doesn't look that it doesn't look fake. And for you to be able to take an image of a person with a background and their normal head movement and swap a different face on it and have it actually look like a real face and a real person talking.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about this in the past, and there's all the horrible things that could go wrong with this, right? But the use of using a GAN, right, and a adversarial network in order to build these, I mean, that's how they build them, right?
Yep.
And looking at what Disney's research team has done, exposing their technology, really shows how far we've gone in, what, really 2-3 years tops, right? If you think about how long this topic has been in the minds of people of what they're doing with deep fakes, it's really impressive. And the thing that struck me from a Disney perspective is you could, leveraging this, take and make culturally appropriate versions of characters within certain societies. So I was looking at one, and they showed in the video a guy's face, and they swapped it out between an Asian face, North European face, etc. You know, in order to really do targeted entertainment content. And my thought here is, with the whole idea of the, you know, the Disney princess and how all the Disney princesses look pretty much the same until we got to, oh God, I don't even remember the one with the frog and Mulan, right? Everybody else was the same in the cartoons. And trying to let kids see themselves in heroes, let them see themselves in the main characters of movies, you could see they're moving so fast and so well at this, you could make targeted movies that allow kids, in the spirit of Disney and all the positive and the hope and the joy, to see themselves as the hero always. I think that's cool.
That is incredible, Michael. Mine is blown away. When you started down that path, the thing that I thought you might be going towards was advertising too, because you could now on the fly change advertising to be like the target, the individualized target you're going after.
Yeah.
But you reminded me too, and this has existed already for a while, where you could send away, to some of the publishing houses, information about your child and have them create a book where right. The child is the hero of the story.
Everybody poops.
While that's true, Michael, that's probably not part of our show.
That's a real popular kids book, evidently. And I didn't ever hear about it until on Colbert the other night. I was like, there's a book called, okay, I guess it makes sense.
Actually, there are several of those kind of books, as I recall. But where I was going with this is that with video, you could provide into the neural network a couple of pictures of a person and then have it construct that person as being the hero of the story. And gosh, wouldn't that be impactful, right? You now have thousands of versions of the same story with different people in it.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. We all automatically go to the negative. We go to
this is the positive.
You know, the political situations, we go to, you know, blackmail, we go to, you know, whatever the negative you can think of, we could put you in a condition you've never been in and then try to blackmail you. But this is the positive. And when I see Disney doing this, I hope that's the path, because this is, I think it's cool. And they give some examples in the attached video, and please go watch it. And you see some of that happening, and it just really struck me. And I was like, that's what this should be.
Yeah, no, that's super cool, Michael. I love it. Now, today's a special day for Disney, too.
Yes, it is.
And the reason for this is that Disney Plus is going to start streaming Hamilton today.
Yes.
So you've got to bet that there's a lot of people, our family included, who are now Disney Plus customers to subscribe. And, you know, for the low...
I subscribed yesterday.
We did too. For the low price of $6.99 or something like that a month, or you can buy a year with a bit of a discount, you can watch Hamilton in all its glory. I think it's from 2016 is when the filming was done.
It's the original cast. Yeah. It's the original Broadway cast.
And it's going to be available at least for a while, which is a good thing. And it was sped up, too, that the target time frame to do this, I think, was another year or so out. But in the interests of providing additional content and I'm sure getting a few more subscriptions, it was sped up to do this on a holiday weekend here in the United States. I kind of was actually hoping that it would be a nationwide simulcast kind of event. Mm-hmm. But that's not the nature of a streaming service. A streaming service says when you want to watch it, you can start to watch it. But I was kind of hoping that this was going to be an event for the country tonight as a unifying kind of thing. And I suspect it might well be that people after dinner tonight will get comfy, sit down, and watch Hamilton. And I fully suspect social networks and social media are going to be all over this today in a huge way.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So what time are you watching, Michael?
I haven't decided yet. I got a lot of stuff to do. But
after dinner, probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably.
All right. So we'll be doing that together at least anyway.
Yes.
All right.
Virtually.
You found, you have to set this up because this is too funny, a Star Trek new thing. So
yes. So in the idea of subscriptions, we're running out of normal TV to watch and we need something to wind down. So we signed up for CBS All Access because I wanted to watch Picard. But before I watched Picard, I wanted to watch the new Star Trek Discovery. I think it was Discovery. So watch a couple of seasons of that. And I'm just about done with Picard. I think we have one or two more episodes left to go. And I was looking around and there is a new CBS All Access show. It will come out in August, called Star Trek Lower Decks. This is everybody else on the ship. It's not the people in the ready room. It's not the people on the bridge. It's not even the ensign in the red shirt who goes down to the planet. This is, I like to think of it as, this is the janitorial crew of the Starship Enterprise. It's a cartoon. It's going to be a comedy, I hope. and it's all the rest of them. It's the rest of the guys and gals that are on board making sure that the Star Trek crew, Star Trek, is it Enterprise? I can't remember if it's actually on the Enterprise.
No, it's not. It's another ship that's kind of like not an important one.
It's the least important people on probably the least important ship in the entire Federation.
Exactly. And it's the they're saying it's the Rick and Morty writer and Solar Opposites co-creator Mike McMahon.
The USS Cerritos?
Something like that.
Yeah. An unimportant fleet ship takes the place where nobody really wants to go.
So this should be a hoot. Rarely going where no one has gone before.
They're probably doing the Kessel run in 12 parsecs or something.
Maybe so. So
live long and prosper.
This will be fun. And it looks like they got 10 episodes that are coming in season one, which is cool. But Here's the big plus, I think. And the big plus is they are not having to film this with live action people. So your production,
it's a cartoon,
can be done in a socially distant way, which kind of harkening back to last week's non-audio episode, the point about how to do production when mm-hmm. you're dealing with a socially distanced kind of space, cartoons are probably a pretty effective way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Have you watched any of Central Park?
No.
Watch it.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Got it.
I'm enjoying it.
All right. Well, we'll have to add that to the mix. Last thing to watch is, and we almost went here. We almost went here before.
This is important. Yes. This is important. You know this? You know what this is, right? What happened on Monday? I think Monday was the anniversary? 20th anniversary of Diablo 2.
I know. That's freaking ridiculous. It is. Because we used to play that all the time. Remember?
Yes. You know, back in the day.
We had our own server every night.
Yep.
Back when we were busy but somehow had time to go
had
and
time
log
to
into
do
the
stuff.
Server and go and do the various runs that they're showing here too.
Yeah. It's just like, when did I have time to do all this stuff?
I don't know. But it's a funny parody of Diablo 2 that, Michael, you found, and it's worth watching for a laugh or two. Yes. If you are a Diablo 2 fan, which means that you've got to be at least 20 years old. Actually, you got to be a lot more than 20 years old.
Probably
got to be at least 30, 35, maybe? Maybe
30,
at least, I don't know.
30, you could start playing around 11.
Yeah, maybe.
It's 31.
You never know, if your parents let you.
Yeah.
Hey, well, Michael, it's been great to have a chance to do a show a little bit longer than usual, but that's what happens when we've got some time. And we're hoping to have more of what you are thinking is cool, important, and interesting. What are you subscribing to? What do you wish you could subscribe to? What do you wish was not a subscription? Tell us. You know,
most everything.
But subscribe. But subscribe to us, because that's important. You know,
because we're free.
We're not charging you a nickel.
Not a penny.
When we're worth every 5 cents of it.
Every penny.
Well, we'll catch everyone here again when we round up the gang, we get back together for our next exciting, thrilling episode of
Games at Work.
Biz. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz. The podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.